Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The World Shapers, conversations with authors about their latest books. I'm your host, Edward Willett, and this episode's guest, Steve Truitt, talking about his Mindset Chronicles, The Deletion, and The Spill. Hi, and welcome to another episode of The World Shapers. My name is Edward Willett. I'm your host. This is the podcast where I talk to other authors about their books. I am myself an author. My latest book was The Tangled Stars, a science fiction novel featuring an AI-uplifted talking cat who becomes a starship captain. It's a humorous novel with lots of adventure, too. That came out from Daw Books back in the fall of 2022 in ebook and audiobook. I didn't have a new novel last year, but I did have a new edition of my first novel, Soul Worm, a young adult fantasy novel set right here in Saskatchewan, which is where I'm speaking to you from. That came out from my own Shadowpaw Press back about a year ago now. I'm working on something new, and I hope there'll be a couple of new novels in the not-too-distant future. Now, Shadowpaw Press, which I just mentioned, is actually one reason I don't have as many novels coming out myself, because I've been so busy running a publishing company, it's been cutting into my writing time. Shadowpaw Press is a small traditional publisher. It's named after our cat, Shadowpaw. And Shadowpaw Press, shadowpawpress.com, has three new books I want to mention here off the top of this podcast, in no particular order. This is The Headmasters by Mark Morton. It is a science fiction, young adult science fiction dystopian novel, I guess you'd call it. Set in the not-too-distant future, there's been an accident at a research facility in northern Ontario, and these alien parasites came in and attached themselves to the people at that site. The rest of the world seems to have gone silent. This happens many years after that incident, and about a young woman who actually finds a way to get rid of these things. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that. So The Headmasters, Mark Morton. Then also we have The Good Soldier by Nir Yaniv. This is a humorous far future science fiction military science fiction satire. Nir Yaniv is an Israeli-born author who now lives in Los Angeles. And you can think of this one as MASH in Outer Space or Catch-22 meets Starship Troopers. It's set in a kind of a Starship Troopers future, but it's very, very funny. So I recommend this one a lot. I would. I published it. And then, of course, we have this one, which is the fourth in the anthology series featuring authors who were guests on this podcast. For the first 150 episodes, I talked to only science fiction and fantasy authors. I'm now speaking to a few people who are outside that narrow genre. It's not a very narrow genre. There's so many subgenres. It's quite a wide genre. But this was the fourth one. I kickstarted it last year. It just came out in January. As you can see, it has Sherry Lynn Kenyon, Michael Brent Collings, high-end authors, I guess you'd say. Lots of award winners and bestsellers, as all of these anthology series have had. And I'll be kickstarting Shapers of Worlds Volume 5, featuring fifth-year guests, very soon. I plan to launch that on April 2nd, and I will, of course, be blabbing it up here on The World Shapers as it goes forward. Shadowpaw Press currently has a crowdfunder campaign running. This is to support the 9 books I'm publishing this spring and summer, which includes The Downloaded, the latest novel by Robert J. Sawyer, which is currently out only in audio as an Audible original, with an A-list cast. Brendan Fraser is probably the one you'd recognize most immediately. And I have the print rights to that, so that will be coming out May 7th. Concurrent with that, there's a new novel by the late, great Canadian science fiction fantasy author Dave Duncan called The Traitor's Son. I've got another new book, which is a poetry collection, coming out, The Door at the End of Everything by Linda Monahan, coming out this summer as well. And there are some reprints. I do reprints of previously published notable books, and the ones coming out in that vein are the Canadian Chills middle grade let's call them horror slash thriller slash science fiction-y books by the Governor General Award-winning author Arthur Slade, Return of the Grudstone Ghosts, Ghost's Hotel, and Invasion of the IQ Snatchers. Those will be coming out this summer. I've got another reprint poetry book, The Glass Lodge by John Brady MacDonald, which are poems that he wrote as a young man, and they came out to great acclaim back 20 years ago now. And this will be a new edition of that with facsimile reproductions of the original handwritten poems when he was a young native man growing up in northern Saskatchewan around Prince Albert. And then we have one more new novel, which is another Dave Duncan book. It's called Corridor to Nightmare, and it's a fantasy novel. So those are all coming out from Shadow Paw Press this summer, and the Crowdfunder campaign, which you can find at Crowdfunder, that's C-R-O-W-D-F-U-N-D-R, no E, .com. /ShadowPaw24. You can go and you can support, and for just a $10 donation, you can pick 3 ebooks of your choice from all those that I published. And for a $30 donation, you can pick 10. And of course, there are other rewards that you can opt for as well. So please check that out and watch for the Kickstarter for Shapers of Worlds Volume 5 coming April 2nd. That's when I'm planning to launch it. Okay, that's a lot about me and my publishing. Let's go on and talk about today's guest, Steve Truitt. So, putting on my glasses so I can read the introduction. Steve Truitt has been hooked on science fiction in the future since he was 3 years old, and his mother set him down in front of the television to watch the launch of Apollo 11. An avid space enthusiast, NASA history buff, and flown-in-space memorabilia collector, he's a proud member of the National Space Society and the Planetary Society, and boasts the impressive fact of having met 5 moonwalkers. Steve has served as a Los Angeles TV news anchor and hosted such acclaimed science and technology programs as National Geographic's The Human Edge and Discovery Channel's Cool Stuff, How It Works. He's also hosted Dream Decoders, Ground Rules, and Sony PlayStation's annual coverage of the Electronic Entertainment Expo, E3. He co-created and co-produced the renowned Discovery series Born Schizophrenic, which earned him and his team the Sign Foundation's Golden Eagle Award for Excellence in Documentary Television. An avid Star Trek fan, are we all? He's also the co-creator and co-host of Energize, a Star Trek podcast, which breaks down episodes of current Star Trek scenes. And we do talk about this a little bit, he even, after determined letter-writing campaign, made a one-line appearance on Star Trek Enterprise, Season 3, Episode 21, if you want to check it out. He's now a successful coach, trainer, and motivational speaker, and he was awarded with the Reader Views Prize for Best Motivational Book of the Year for his book Stop Waiting for Permission. His best-selling first novel, The Deletion, which examines life in a post-artificial intelligence world where a disconnected society scrambles for solution through a new form of connection called Mindset, came out last February. Book 2, The Spill, comes out this May. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife and 4 daughters. So, let's talk to Steve Truitt. So, Steve, welcome to The World Shapers.
Thank you, Edward. It's great being here. Thanks for having me.
Now, I was taken in your bio about how you, when you were 3 years old, your mother set you down to watch the launch of Apollo 11. And that told me 2 things. It told me exactly how much older than you I am, because Apollo 11 landed on the moon on my 10th birthday. So I must be about 7 years older than you.
That's probably right. Yeah.
But also, you know, that launched your lifelong interest in space. And I don't know if that had anything to do with mine, but I've also had a lifelong interest in space. So when I'm looking for connections, that's one I certainly glommed onto right away, plus the whole love of Star Trek and all of that. We'll talk about some of that as we go along, but let's begin with tell me about yourself.
Okay.
Tell me about your writing journey.
Sure. You know, I didn't think I was going to be a writer until I turned 54. Or 5. I was a television news anchor and host, Discovery Channel, Nat Geo, Home and Garden TV. I was a local news reporter in Los Angeles for Channel 4 and also for CBS Channel 2. And I just thought I was going to be on TV the rest of my life. But that business changed dramatically around 2008 with the crash. Reality TV really came into prominence. There were more hosts, but actors weren't working because of the strike. So they hired all these actors to host. And I just saw the writing on the wall that I just wasn't going to make it past a certain point. And I started to try something different. I got into coaching. I got certifications in DISC, which is a communication style, Lean Six Sigma, DDI, all these courses that taught me how to train people in the corporate world. So I completely reinvented myself and got into the corporate world, mostly in clean energy, because I liked solar anyway, and I thought that was a great idea. And I worked for a lot of solar companies, including Tesla, which was my last one. And then I got recruited for a company, and they're in Torrance, California, not far from where I work, or where I live, and just started consulting for them. And now I do consulting, but I really missed the entertainment aspect of my life. I loved being on TV. I loved producing television shows. And I sat down with a buddy of mine probably 6 years ago, and I just said, I don't know what to do. Should I go back to TV and try? I don't think I could make it. I mean, I've been out so long and I'm kind of an older guy. Why would they be interested in me? And he said to me, tell me about just what you just asked. Tell me about your journey. What got you here? And what I kept repeating to him throughout my career was that I was a writer. I wrote a lot of my shows, episodes. I do a lot of writing and consulting. I was even writing in New York when I first got out of college for an advertising agency. And he said, it sounds to me like you're a writer, actually. And I just, some light went off in my head. And I had this story in my mind for years that I thought, I'll never write a novel. And wouldn't you know it, I've said, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. And I wrote not one, but I'm on my second. And there'll be a third. And I've now decided that my third act in life will be as a full-time novelist.
Well, and you mentioned in your bio that science fiction has been an interest of yours your entire life. And of course, the Star Trek thing. So let's talk about Star Trek a little bit before we get to your novel, because certainly there is a certain age group of people for whom Star Trek was the gateway drug into science fiction.
Yeah.
Robert J. Sawyer, who's been on my show a couple of times and who I know really well, is a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
I would have been more of, I am a huge Star Trek fan. Would have been more of one if we actually got the episodes, because we lived in a place where you could barely get any television. So I always watched them in reruns, as I think many people did. But what drew you to that? And then tell me about the Enterprise experience.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I think what drew me to Star Trek was what drew most people who are fans of Star Trek. And that is the appeal of a future where we've come together as humans, as a human race. And our challenge now is out there in the cosmos, be it either facing a foe or transforming a culture or whatever Star Trek means to people. To me, as a child, watching the original series and then The Next Generation, which really I really got into, it meant an escape from what felt like a world that wasn't headed toward a Star Trek future. And in fact, in a lot of interviews, I've been accused of being really negative and pessimistic about the human race, largely because I think there is such an anti-Star Trek feel out there. Like, we don't have a future. Let's just live for now and destroy the place. But I just absolutely love the idea of exploration, of science, of logic, of proving what is true, not being able to state something emphatically if you don't have the evidence for it. And then, of course, all the sci-fi itself, the ship itself. I thought the ships were beautiful. And so I moved to Los Angeles to be in broadcasting in 1992. Got into radio immediately and then into television, as I mentioned. And, you know, all the productions out here, Paramount Studios was a few miles from my apartment where I was living. And Ron Sermo was the casting director largely for Star Trek at the time. So I just started writing him letters. And I said, I want to be on a show. And back then, I think it was Voyager that was going on. And I wrote a couple spec scripts for Voyager and sent them in. I'm like, well, you know, you can have this. You don't have to pay me. Just put it on the air. And I wrote Ron Sermo probably, I'm going to guess realistically, 6 letters a year. Just handwritten letters. Please, just, I want one line on any Star Trek show. I don't care. And this is true. After 7 years of writing him, he finally called me and he goes, all right, fine, get in here. Just stop writing me letters. And I went in and I had a line on Enterprise season, I believe it was season 3. And I got to meet Scott Bakula, and I got to meet David Andrews, who was my co-star. He was the co-star. I kind of worked behind him, but he was a great guy. And it was directed by the lady who played B'Elanna Torres on Voyager. So it was one day. It was thrilling. I had a line. You know, it was a great time.
Of course, current Star Trek is a lot of it shot in Toronto. I know Discovery. Yeah, Discovery and
Strange New World
with Christopher. Yeah, that's. I don't know why it couldn't come to me for a minute.
Yeah.
The Christopher Pike series,
right?
And it is funny because I know I've done stage work and I know actors, and I'll be watching something like that, and somebody will pop up and think, "Wait a minute, I was in a play with him when I was, you know, 30 years ago."
Right.
And they show up as a Vulcan or something. I was watching The Expanse, and there was a girl I knew as a kid, a child actor here in Regina. And I was watching that. But that Martian Marine looks awfully familiar. It turned out to be her. So it's always funny. It does kind of take you out of the experience of being in a strange new world when you see somebody that you knew. My other one was Tatiana Maslany, who starred in Orphan Black. I've known her since she was 11. I directed her in a play when she was a kid. And so, you know, she's a huge, huge star, but it's always interesting. That's an aside. So on the science fiction side.
I did find that, though, Star Trek appeals to a lot of theater people. They quote Shakespeare all the time in Star Trek, and they also quote other verse.
Look at Picard. I mean, he's a Shakespearean and Shatner was a Stratford Shakespearean actor before he became Kirk. So
that's right.
And Scott Bakula has done stage. So, you know, it certainly is a thing.
Yeah.
Did I just freeze for you for a minute?
You
there?
Did. It was charming. It wasn't like the ugly freeze. It was my cute smile, closed eyes
looking there.
Yeah.
Did you read science fiction? That's what I was trying to get back around to.
Yeah, I did. I read a lot of Asimov. My favorite book by Daniel Keyes is Flowers for Algernon, which is probably the only book I've read like 4 or 5 times, and it still gets me every time. Mm-hmm. I really loved Asimov, and then the classics, 1984, and such. But I read a little bit of Arthur Clarke, but not a lot. It's strange because I like Arthur Clarke because he is so realistic in his writing, whereas others are fantasy, and I tend to be more realistic in my writing. I haven't read as much Arthur Clarke. The stuff that I read that got me excited about writing and I emulate is Tom Clancy, actually. I read a lot of his stuff in college, and I just found his writing to be just explosive and incredible.
It's not called science fiction, but it is really near future science fiction, in the broadest sense of the word. So, well, let's talk about then your Mindset Chronicles. You said you had this story in mind for a very, very long time. There's a hoary cliche in these kind of interviews where you say, "Where do you get your ideas?" So we have reached that point.
Yes. So when I was a kid, I had a story in my head about an alien that comes to Earth and divides the planet. Some are believers, some are terrified of her, which to me is the essence of human nature. You're going to have people who accept, you're going to have people who are terrified. Even in college, I tried to get my major to be I went to University of Maryland and I ended up being a speech major, but I tried to create a major called mass. I can't remember what it was called, mass communication or something like that, where the study of how one person can affect an entire culture and how an entire culture can influence an individual. And that stuff has always fascinated me, how people are influenced by movements and so forth. And so my original idea was this alien comes to Earth. It's a young girl. She comes by herself. She doesn't speak the language, but everyone interprets what she's here to do and to be. And I might have gotten that idea from Being There, which is the Peter Sellers movie, which I'm sure you know, from the late 70s. And she's crucified. And after that, what happens to the planet? And that short story, which I entered into a few competitions, was called The Third Testament, basically the Third Testament of the Bible. She becomes the new Messiah. So I didn't want to write that anymore because I wanted to write more of a science fiction kind of more planet-based kind of thing. So I came up with an idea where an inventor, like an Elon Musk, in my book, his name is Peter Erickson, loosely based on Elon and my own brother-in-law, who's a Swedish genius and has many patents and has done a lot of incredible things with very small diodes and sensors and so forth. He invents a way to connect all of the minds of people by implantation of visual and audio devices, which at first brings sight to the blind and hearing to the deaf, but then he connects it all. And he uses a centuries-old concept called crowd wisdom, thinking, look, if 700 people guess the weight of an ox and don't get it right, the average of all of the guesses is usually spot on. Now, this was an actual experiment done in the early 1900s. And it was so fascinating to Sir Francis Galton, who did the survey, that he did it again and repeated it again and repeated it again. And he kept finding the same results. 700 people get it wrong, but the average is actually dead on, the weight of the ox. And he termed that crowd wisdom. Mm-hmm. I became fascinated with this idea. It fit right into my thought of groupthink and how you're influenced by certain people. So I wanted to write the book about the end of an era, like let's say AI, which is where the first book, which is called The Deletion, starts. AI destroys itself, falls on its own sword to save humanity because humanity is just not using it correctly. And AI, which is smarter than humans, says, you know what? You're probably going to use me to create the Terminator. I'm just going to kill myself and you guys will be on your own. So we open the first book in a period called the deletion, where all communication is shut down and people are basically back in the Stone Age in a lot of ways, and they have to recover. And in this recovery, this Peter Erickson comes along and he says, I can reconnect us with mindset. So he does. And in the first book, everything's going pretty well until this alien arrives at Earth. So I take the original short story and I throw it right into the middle of mindset. Alien still arrives. And the end of the first book is the cliffhanger where they actually have her and go up to space, find her and bring her back to Earth. So the second book is called The Spill. And The Spill refers to what happens when this crowd wisdom collective, which is now probably inhabiting about 4 billion people on the planet, is faced with this really strange concept of an alien coming to Earth. And how do they deal with it? And it's she appears as a young girl. She's got red hair and freckles. She doesn't talk, but she's very charming. How does the collective handle it? Well, they don't, because crowd wisdom, which is tested here, fails and thus results in what's called a spill. In other words, the collective cannot handle the overload of impulses and pulses and emotions that happen with this. And that's what the second book is about.
Things fall apart. The center cannot hold.
That's right.
To go way, way back.
Yeah, that's right.
So when you decided to write a novel, not having written, but you had written a short story, had you published short stories or any sort of fiction before you wrote this novel? I mean, you've done a lot of writing, obviously.
I've done a lot of writing, but I've never published any story. Even the short story, the original Third Testament, was never published. I just entered it into contests. The best I did was I got third place in some kind of honorable mention or feedback from the judges, which means they liked it or read it twice or something. But it didn't get a lot of traction, and I didn't want it to. Back then, I didn't care. And here's the weird thing, Edward. I was offered, at the time I was hosting, an agent from CAA had read one of my Star Trek spec scripts and said, I'll take you on as an agent if you want to be a writer. And I turned him down. This was in the late 90s. Because I was hosting and I'm like, nah, I just want to be on TV. I'm good. And part of me just wishes I had done it because I might be writing for Discovery or for Strange New Worlds.
Well, as long as we're doing old poetry, that's two roads diverged in a snowy woods.
So. That's right. A little Robert Frost reference.
So you decided to write a novel. You hadn't done one before. What was your process? Did you do a detailed outline? Did you just start writing? How did that all work for you?
I had the idea. I fully bake ideas in my head almost to the point where if I could fast enough, I could just spill it and vomit it all out. I didn't do an outline for the first one because I'd never written a novel before. So the way I was able to construct it was I went onto a website called Wattpad. Are you familiar with Wattpad?
Yes.
It was recommended by a friend and I just started writing it in Wattpad, chapter by chapter by chapter. And because I had the idea fully baked in my head and because I had thought about a lot of it for, a couple of decades, it did just kind of write itself, or wrote me, if you will. But I didn't like the platform Wattpad itself. I wasn't a fan of how it's laid out, and it can be very political. And then it started to get really oversaturated. And I think I missed the window of Wattpad. Had I started 10 years ago, maybe it would have been better for me. But I had a fully formed, you know, I probably had 40 chapters in Wattpad. So I just pulled it off Wattpad and then got Scrivener instead, which is a great writing tool, and throw it into Scrivener. And I thought, well, I want to finish this. And so I wrote the last chapter around the time I wrote the first, and then I just kind of backfilled on both ends and was somehow able to put it together. It was cobbled together. It took me a year. Second book took me 3 months, did it all in Scrivener with an outline, a lot easier.
And once you had the first draft, what was the revision and process like? Were you showing it? Well, you had it on Wattpad, so people were reading it. In a sense, you had beta readers on Wattpad, I guess.
I did. Yeah. I got a few feedback. I got a few pieces of feedback that I thought were really good, but not a lot. I didn't get a lot of traction. I was new. There was a lot of stars on Wattpad that get a lot of followers. I think I reached number 7 on one of their categories, which was great. I did have one person on Wattpad reach out to me who read the whole thing and was a big fan. His name is Lewis Williams. He's from the UK, and he gave me a lot of great feedback. But mostly the second draft was done when I got it into Scrivener and I was able to read it. I didn't read it as I wrote it. So I throw it into Scrivener and then I just started reading it, and I thought, okay, well, I can clean this up. So to be honest, I only did 2 drafts of it. And then I got myself linked up with Paper Raven Books, which is a hybrid publishing company, and went into business with them, and they took it from there. And I wrote a third draft and did copy editing and story development, and they work with you. They have a whole team that help you in marketing. And we launched just about a year ago, actually, about this time last year. Mm-hmm.
So it's a, you know, the AI, the what's sounds almost like a version of Neuralink, Elon's. Do you know there's a Saskatchewan connection to Elon, by the way? When he first came over here, he worked for a while on a farm out in Swift Current. Swift Current, Saskatchewan. He has relatives there.
I thought he went to school there.
He might have. I've seen a really awful picture of him from that era.
The hair was receding.
Yeah. Wearing a cowboy hat, I think, in the picture.
Oh, yeah. That's worse. Yeah.
Anyway, but you know, it sounds a bit like that. Was there a lot of? Did you have to do some research on the science involved? Mm-hmm.
You know, I did. And the way I research is as I'm writing, I think will prove this, right? So I come up with an idea. Usually the ideas will come up while I'm writing. Okay. So for instance, and to go back to the Neuralink thing really quickly, the timing couldn't be better because I hadn't known about Neuralink while I was writing the first book. I just was imagining. I know that Michio Kaku had written in his book about contact lenses of the future that will allow you to see certain things, maybe entertainment. So I borrowed that. But I thought, you know, if you're going to throw contact lenses on top, what if you were to integrate them underneath your cornea? How would that last? How would you be able to have that happen? So I did some research and I said, what is the least rejected form of fiber that you could put into your body? And the answer was hemp. And so I coated the lenses on the outside with hemp, which coated a gold filament, which was the receiver and the transmitter within the lens. So it was imagination plus prove it. Make sure that it can actually happen, which is Star Trek, because they came up with an imagination, but they had to ground it in reality. So that's how I do my research. I come up with an idea. If it doesn't track in reality or it's not a feature-based thing, then I just don't write it.
Well, the other thing that you've hit, of course, is AI, although what we have now is not self-aware AI by any means, large language models and all that. But nevertheless, it's interesting that you're looking to the end of AI and what that might mean if we become completely attached to it or dependent on it. So what drew you to the concept of AI in the first place?
I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm a bit of a snob. Sometimes I think I'm better than everyone. And so when, and this is probably because I was like a short kid and bullied. So I'm like, I'm not going to be part of the group, right? I didn't join a fraternity in college. I've always been an outsider. Mm-hmm. And I used to be proud of it. Now I'm just like, okay, that's who I am. But I saw, when I see trends, like an AI thing, I think to myself, is this the next Psy song? What's that song he did? Gangnam Style, right? So when Gangnam Style comes out, everyone's doing the dance. And I'm like, you know, in 2 weeks, you're going to be so embarrassed that you did this. Shame on you. But all my friends are like, we love it. Macarena, all of that. So I always look at that and I think, this is a bubble. This is a trend. What happens after the trend is over? You know, bell-bottom jeans and all the other things that happen in life. So AI starts to hit. And I think, well, this is great, but it hasn't been proven. It hasn't been baked into our culture yet, like television or the internet. It's still new. We're still discovering it. Chances are it'll only just be co-opted by people who know how to make money out of it. It's probably not, and I could be wrong about this, of course, it's probably not going to be one of those things that takes us over like Terminator and kills us all. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it just becomes a tool that smart people know how to use or rich people know how to make money off of. So I just thought, well, what if I took that away from the first adopters? What if all the people that were relying on it and loved it and, you know, it was a part of them, what if that disappeared? You're so in love with it now. What if we took it from you? And so that's where the first book, The Deletion, starts. AI ends itself because humans have no idea how to handle it. And they're just, again, monkeys with computers. They just don't know how to use it resourcefully and correctly and positively. And so AI is like, you know what? I'm smarter than you. You don't deserve this. I'm going to back out. I'm leaving the party. I'm doing the Irish goodbye. And it leaves. And humans are left with nothing. And something about that fascinates me. My question is, well, okay, now what?
Well, and writing science fiction is all about those kinds of questions. If this goes on and what if are the two big ones for creating science fiction stories. And you've got both. If this goes on and we become dependent on AI, and then what if it goes away? It's interesting. There is, you know, there's been a few stories about things that we take for granted going away and the effect that would have on. I remember one years and years and years ago. I was a kid when I read it, but some bacteria gets out of probably a germ warfare lab or something, and it eats plastic, and suddenly we have a world without plastic, and what that would mean. And of course, you got airplanes falling out of the sky, and because it happens, it gets onto an airplane, and all the plastic goes away while you're in flight, and things like that. There's been a few stories like that, and they do tend to give you a post-apocalyptic, in a way.
Yeah.
So you've got the two books. How many books will there be in the series, and where are you on the third one?
Okay, there'll be three. And I just want to say in the beginning, my buddy told me put everything into the first book and I couldn't. So I created I just had to split it at least. So I did create a cliffhanger for the first one. But by the time I really got into the second one, I realized, well, there's so much more to tell. So there will be three. Book two is in final layout form now. It comes out May 22nd on Amazon and Goodreads and Barnes & Noble. It's called The Spill. Third book. I guess I can tell you. I haven't told anyone the title. I'm going to tell you.
Ooh.
It's called The Benevolent, and it's a jump in time from the original first two books. I can't tell you too much about it, but the alien story doesn't go away. And I just started writing it last weekend. My daughter had an SAT to take, so I drove her out to Placentia, California. And while she's taking the tests, I had 3 hours in a Starbucks, and I had my outline, and I wrote the prologue and the first chapter, and we're underway.
What has the reception been, and have you been pleased? Do you think that you're reaching readers and reaching them in the way that you want to?
I am definitely reaching them in the way that I want to, because everyone, you ask the best questions. I really like your interview style. I enjoyed watching all your other stuff too. To prepare for this. And again, thank you for this.
Thank you.
I like the reception I'm getting because the people who are reading it are genuine readers and they seem to like it. I knew when I started this, my wife and I decided we were going to do a 6-year plan, that I was not going to be an overnight success. This is a first book. There's billions of authors out there, especially in sci-fi. There's a lot of content. So we're in a slow burn march toward my inevitable writing career, which gives us another 4 years to go. You know, I can still be a consultant. She's a CPA, so she can do taxes. So everything is going the way I planned it to go. I am not an overnight sensation. I think I only have 35 reviews on Amazon, but they're good reviews. And I did the audiobook for the first one, and the audiobook is doing better than the book because I have a background in voiceovers and radio and TV. And so I read it, and it was my book. And so I read it in a way that I think was appealing to listeners. And so I'm on the way. I'm not a huge success yet, but that's fine. We're getting there. That's why we're doing these podcasts and all the stuff that we're doing, is to just try to get it out there and maybe find that audience.
I was going to ask you about the audiobook. I have a pretty good voice for this sort of thing myself.
You have a great voice. I love good voices. Do you know Jim Thornton in Los Angeles?
No.
You're very similar to him. You've got a great voice.
It's funny. This is another aside, but I was in a coffee shop yesterday working, and I overheard somebody at the table next to me who was auditioning for the part of Darth Vader in the Ojibwe dub of A New Hope, I think he said. I thought that's the last thing I expected to hear in a coffee shop. He said there was not much money in it. And that's because there can't be that many Ojibwe speaking listeners for this. But still, it was just a funny thing to overhear.
Did he have the timbre and the deep voice?
No, actually, his voice was up here a bit. And I thought, you don't sound like Darth Vader to me, but I'm not the casting director. So
right, exactly.
Anyway, the thing about audiobooks, though, is that they are tremendously time consuming to create. What do you find different between audiobooks and print books? I'm not an audiobook person. I've recorded some of my own, but I don't listen to them. Do you listen to them?
I did listen to mine. Others?
No, I listened to mine.
I had to listen to mine. Yes, I do. So my wife and I, we've got four children, and they're, one of them is about to go to college, and we spend a lot of time driving to soccer games.
I only have one daughter, and I spent a lot of time driving to things. So.
Exactly. We have four daughters, all teenagers. That's another story. And we take them everywhere, and it's a pleasure for us. And so, yeah, we throw books on, and it depends. We have to agree on what the book we're going to listen to is. So we listened to both Obama's books last summer while we were driving back and forth, Michelle and Barack Obama's books. And I listened to a lot of Neil deGrasse Tyson. He was my college professor at Maryland.
Really?
Yeah. And so I love listening to him. I think he's got a really great style about him. But yeah, I do listen to audiobooks.
What do you think the impact on readers is and listeners? How does the book hit differently for listeners than it might for readers? I'm curious because it's two entirely different experiences, even though and I'm actually publishing Robert J. Sawyer's next book, The Downloaded, which is just out right now as an Audible original.
I just saw that. Yeah.
It's got Brendan Fraser in it and people like that.
Yeah.
And I got the print rights because he wanted a Canadian publisher so he could hit the Canadian literary circuit. And we've known each other for a long time, so I'm publishing it.
Congratulations.
But they're two different animals, I think.
Yeah.
Which do you think serves your book better?
I think for my book, it's the audio version. I know as a reader, a listener, and a human that in the middle of reading or listening, my mind can wander. And so my goal with reading my own book was to keep the listener engaged, not by overacting or being, you know, overdone, but just by loving the material so much and doing what I can to make each word matter. Part of my career is coaching managers and people in business. I have to keep them engaged. Sometimes I do 4-hour coaching sessions or 4-hour training sessions. Got to keep them engaged. And so that's part of my background, is I know how to keep people interested. And so I think that's what I put into my book as best I can. I have gotten great feedback on the audiobook. And I think that means that people are actually listening to it, not wandering off too much and getting a lot out of it.
So we'll be doing the second book, or maybe you've already done it, and the third as well?
In all honesty, I did a first draft of the audio for the second book, and I didn't like it. I think something must have been going on with me. I might have been tired. It took me only a week to do it. I have a little home studio here. I'm going to do it again and give it justice. And then, yes, the third book, I'll also, when I'm done, I'll do the audio version of that too.
Well, we've already talked about what you're working on, which is the third book. Yes. Where can people find you online and keep up with what you're doing? I've seen your website. It's a very good website.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was also Paper Raven Books. They helped me design that website. You can find me at stevetruitt.com. That's how I spell it. I do a blog there, which I call myself a futurist, only because I think about the future. I don't think that I'm qualified to call myself that, but I do it anyway. So there's a blog on there. I talk about AI in the future and crowd wisdom and what might be happening in the near future. You can go to amazon.com and search Steve Truitt or The Deletion. Goodreads, barnesandnoble.com. I'm probably going to be doing some signings in California this spring and summer. So if you go to stevetruitt.com, I'll keep you updated on that.
And from your past life, you must be all over YouTube and streaming services and stuff.
You know what's funny about that, Edward, is that I am, but it's all my old TV stuff. I don't have a beard. I'm about 15 years younger, and I'm hosting the Sony PlayStation event at E3, and I'm being a goofball, so it's a lot of my TV things. I haven't co-opted YouTube yet as an author.
It's funny what shows up on there. I hosted a local show called Net Talk, which was a phone-in computer show. This was like turn of the century. We're talking 2000, 2002, 2003, somewhere in there. And somebody put a couple of those episodes up on YouTube, and it's like we're talking about... I remember this was the era when... I remember when our tech guy brought in this thumb drive. He said, "You won't believe it. This has 2 megabytes of storage space." This little thing. Wow.
A whole megabyte.
And of course, I look 20 years younger. And yeah, it's funny the things you can find on there.
In 1983 or 4 or 5, my father came home with the first Apple Macintosh, the square one. And he set it down and he goes, "This is the future of computing." And then underneath there was a little box that had a light on it. And I said, "Hey, what's that?" And he goes, that's the external hard drive. Nobody has this. It has 20 megabytes of storage on it. And he goes to me with all seriousness, "You'll never need another computer."
Yeah, that I was a newspaper reporter in the 80s. And I remember doing school tours and showing them our hard drive, which was twice the size of a microwave oven, like two of them shoved together. "This is our hard drive. This has 20 megabytes of storage.
20 megabytes.
And here's the backup one, which has just as much, you know, so everything gets copied over to it." But that was in Commodore 64 and Trash 80 days, TRS 80 days and all that. So anyway, well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Steve, and best of luck with the book. And you know, when the third one comes out, maybe I'll have you back on again.
I would love it. Thanks. It was really nice talking to you and getting to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye for now. And thanks to Steve for that great conversation. I certainly enjoyed it, and I hope that you did as well. I hope he did too. Just a few closing things before I wrap this up. First of all, a reminder that you can find The World Shapers online at theworldshapers.com. You can also find it on Facebook at The World Shapers and on X at The World Shapers. You can find me personally at edwardwillett.com. You can find me on X at ewillett. You can find me on Facebook at edward.willett. And you can find me on Instagram at edwardwillettauthor. You can also find me on YouTube, which you may very well have done right now if you're watching this on YouTube. My channel has not only the World Shapers podcast, but some music and some other stuff. And most notably, I guess, the Walking in Regina videos. You can live walk with me. I live stream my walks around my home city almost every day. Not quite every day, but several times a week. Some are long, some are short, different areas. Downtown quite a bit because I live close to downtown, but I try to get around as much as I can, especially once the weather improves. There must be hundreds of those now. There's lots of them anyway. So you can pay a virtual visit to Regina with me If you subscribe to my YouTube channel, you'll get notified whenever I go live with another Walking in Regina. And then, of course, you can always watch the recordings after that. And that's just at youtube.com/EdwardWillett. And then Shadowpaw Press, which I talked about quite a bit off the top, is at shadowpawpress.com. You can find it on X at Shadowpaw Press, on Facebook at Shadowpaw Press, and on Instagram at Shadowpaw Press. And, of course, I will be back sooner than usual, actually, I think, this week, because of this one going live on the day that it does. Every week I'll be back talking to another author about their latest books. I hope you'll continue to join me, and that's it for this time. Bye for now.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.